Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your motherfucking ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 189 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of February 16th, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me tonight, as always, is versatile wind instrument Dan Ryan.
That make me like a recorder?
I'd call you a recorder.
I've is that you versatile? Yeah, you have called me worse. That's certainly true.
It's true. And joining us for the first time is our special guest, Mr. Poop Poop Fart.
Hello.
He is here as part of our Creators Month. We're going to be talking about his YouTube videos and whatever the hell else comes to mind, because that's what we do here. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the words Stone Age Gamer in the subject line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. So, Mr. Fart,
yes.
Should we call you Poop Poop, or do you prefer Mr. Fart?
I go by either PPF or Mr. Fart.
Okay.
Either one is fine with me.
Okay. Excellent, excellent. All right, PPF. I'll stick with that. That's usually what I refer to you as when I'm telling other people about you. I say, oh, have you heard PPF? And they're like, oh, no, what's that? It's like, well, it's Poop Poop Fart.
Yeah.
You know, as a matter of fact.
I changed my name recently because when people asked me in real life what my name was, I didn't want to have to say Poop Poop Fart. But I find myself explaining what my name is anyway. Like, I always just say, it stands for Poop Poop Fart. I don't know. I just enjoy saying it.
It is fun to say. So, how did you come up with that name? Did your parents give you this name? Or did you just decide this is what you're going to roll with on your YouTube?
Well, when I first joined YouTube, I just wanted to make a channel so I could, like, you know, post comments and stuff. So, I was having a hard time coming up with a name that wasn't taken already, and eventually I just started like typing in obscenities into the box just to see what would go through, and I eventually wound up with a Poop Poop Fart. First it wasn't really a problem because I never uploaded videos, but then I gradually started uploading stuff, and at some point I realized that my channel name was Poop Poop Fart.
Damn it.
Yeah,
this is a decision I made in jest. Now I'm stuck with it.
Yeah. Oh, and fun fact, Poop and Poop Poop were already taken.
Well,
just throwing that out there.
Clearly. I mean,
Poop doesn't surprise me. Poop Poop kind of surprises me, but, you know.
Yeah, Poop is not surprising. Poop Poop was kind of a shock.
It usually is.
This is so why don't you scatological at best.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is that you do? Because I mean, I love your YouTube channel, but I don't know if our listeners do. So what is Poop Poop Fart?
Well, I basically arrange covers of video game music. I like to use acoustic instruments. I know there are a lot of channels out there that use like electric guitars and keyboards and stuff, but I just really like acoustic sounds, so I try to primarily use acoustic stuff.
And you definitely go outside of the box. I mean, the one video that I was mentioning before the show earlier, my son likes your videos. His favorite thing that he's ever seen you do is slap a bunch of PVC pipes with flip-flops.
I'm
mining melancholy,
PVC.
I think. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. I like to... the thing is, I can't... Like, if I could, I would buy, like, an actual marimba or whatever. I don't have a whole lot of money, so I try to find creative ways to make sounds that I hear in the original tracks, you know? Mm-hmm. And I basically just go as cheap as possible.
Just like this podcast.
Pretty much. I mean, the first thing I saw on your... I don't even remember how I found you. I think it was like a post on maybe Go Nintendo or something linked me to a cover that you did of... It wasn't Mining Melancholy. It was a... Did you do Mining Melancholy before Hothead Bop?
I think so, yeah.
It was one of those ones where I was like, somebody actually covered this song? Because I never really imagined anybody would cover those songs, because they, especially like those Donkey Kong Country 2 songs, they're kind of out there. And like when you did a Hothead Bop, for example, and you recreated that lava sound effect that happens in the background, I would think that most people attempting to cover that song wouldn't really consider that part of the song. And but you did it, and you know, it comes and goes in the exact right moments. And I'm super impressed with how accurate you are with these things. And one of the questions I always wanted to ask you is, how do you choose which instruments you're going to go with? Like the going to Hothead Bop in particular, it's a, if anyone's listening doesn't know what we're talking about, it's a song by David Wise from Donkey Kong Country 2. It's a phenomenal tune. It's the one where you're on the spider and you're in the lava and whatnot. But obviously, like the blowing air into the bucket was super cool to make the lava sound, and that sounded way cooler than I thought it would. But there was like crud, I'm thinking of the wrong song. there was an instrument
Jesus
in
Christ.
Well, I'm so unprofessional. There was an instrument in the other one, Mining Melancholy, where it's kind of like the lower do-do-do-do, and like you play it on, what instrument, is that a melodica of some sort?
Oh yeah, that's a bass melodica, and then I was also doubling up that part with a bass recorder.
Okay, wait, bass recorder? That's a thing?
Yeah. All right. It goes all the way down to like, maybe great contrabass or something, I don't know. But those are really expensive.
Wow. Yeah, because I've definitely seen you use a lot of instruments that I've never seen before. But like, how do you think of, like, when you're listening to, obviously, like, newer stuff, like, I know you've done a bunch of Banjo-Kazooie tunes. It's relatively easy to tell, like, what they were going for in the newer stuff. But when you go into older stuff, particularly even older, like the 8-bit kind of stuff, how do you choose which instrument you're going to use to represent those sounds in your covers?
Yeah, a lot of the older stuff, especially, like, Donkey Kong, where there's a lot of really synthetic sounds. It's kind of hard to associate an acoustic sound to go along with the original sounds. I basically just try to find an instrument that sounds as similar as possible. Other than that, sometimes I just, because my primary instrument is the guitar, so sometimes I just kind of default to the guitar for lead parts, because I'm just more comfortable playing the guitar, and I just like the way it sounds. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah, sometimes it's kind of a crapshoot. I just kind of randomly choose an instrument.
Let's see how it works.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Do you know how many instruments you have off the top of your head? Because I've seen glockenspiels. I've seen, obviously, PVC pipes. And the new one you just put up from Wind Waker, you have those pan flutes. Did you make those pan flutes out of PVC?
Yes, yes. Yes, I did. Yeah, because I looked online, and pan flutes are apparently really expensive. I got some PVC, I glued some, like, bottle caps to close off one end, and then I just, like, taped them together, and apparently that works as a pan flute, I found out.
Because it sounds pretty legit.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you noticed, but the lower notes were made with a wider diameter pipe, and those were really hard to blow, and I can see why you would want to, like, buy a professional pan flute instead of using PVC. Because it was really difficult to play, but it ended up working in the end.
So you had I'm sorry to any of our listeners if this is too much inside baseball, but I can't not ask these questions. So I noticed that you had three different ones. The first time I watched it, I didn't realize that they were actually three different. They were three different sized sets, right? You made three different pan flutes, or am I just imagining things?
Yeah, that's right. Each part of the chord, I don't know. Each part required different notes. So I made three different sets of pan flutes. And, so it goes from the lower pan flute, then the middle, and then the higher pan flute.
Nice. That was super cool. That just...
Thank you.
I think it came out just today, the day that we're recording, was the Dragon Roost Island. That was pretty darn fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Well, it's... All right. So, now, this is actually the first time I've heard you... Well, the second time I've heard you talk. The only other time I've heard you speak was on a video you released a while back where it was like a channel update and you were represented by a puppet.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I really hate talking to cameras. So I went to the lengths of creating a puppet of myself so that I wouldn't have to talk to a camera. And I also really hate my voice. You know, since I was using a puppet, I was able to kind of cartoon it up a little bit and not use my real voice. But yeah, I just really hate talking to cameras.
That's why we do an audio podcast.
That's why we do this nonsense. I mean, nobody wants to look at us. We got faces for radio.
We do. Ask our wives. So are there other inspirations? I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. I've looked back on your YouTube channel. It goes back like 10 years of different covers you've been doing. And you used to do a lot more non-video game cover stuff. Like I noticed a couple of They Might Be Giants songs in there, which I was super fond of because I'm a huge They Might Be Giants fan.
Yeah, me too.
So you've been... now I'm upset. I didn't notice those when I was looking through stuff.
Yeah, you
I
gotta go notice, like way back.
I didn't go that far back. I did notice my daughter, one of my daughters, was very, very excited to hear Katy Perry's Roar today.
Ah, yes.
That's, like, yeah, I wanted to ask you about, I was literally just listening to that beforehand, because I'm vaguely familiar with the real song, but your cover of it is just like, this is really, like, this is gorgeous.
What it's really good. And keep in mind, she is an 8-year-old girl, so like, Katy Perry, you know, speaks to her, and she looked up from the game that she was playing, and she was like, is that Roar? That's awesome. What is that? And like, she ran over to my phone to like see what I was doing, and like, I'm listening to it and playing pad, and she's like, is that coming from Puzzle and Dragons? No, it's not. You know, and I clicked over and showed her the video, and she was just like, wow, that's really cool. It's like, hey, does all these video game songs too? She's like, that's awesome. Can I watch it on YouTube Kids? And no, YouTube Kids filters out poop part. But
oh, really? Am I not on YouTube Kids? Really?
I didn't see.
I'm gonna check right now.
Check it now.
Because my son also watches truck videos on YouTube Kids all the time.
Maybe she typed it in wrong. Maybe my kid doesn't know how to spell poop part as one.
What if
word.
I just type in PPF? Let's see what happens. This right here. This is hot radio right here. Now you came up. I got you. Not your channel. I got Flower Garden just showed up.
Oh, nice. That's the one video that comes up on YouTube Kids.
Yeah, look at that. I don't see any other of your video. Oh, no. There's Caramel Dancing.
Oh, wow.
I actually don't know what that is. I know it was an older one. And there's Green Greens. Yeah, you got a bunch of stuff on.
Oh, okay.
You know, not getting filtered out.
Never mind.
Shala's
theme. She typed it in wrong.
Awesome.
I am a failure as a father. My kid doesn't know how to spell either poop or poop fart.
How dare you?
What am I doing?
God, I mean, that sounds like a success as a father to me.
I suppose I mean, you might not be wrong. I'm not sure. But yeah, she was super impressed by that. So
how did that come about? Yeah, what made you do that song out of what happened with that?
Yeah, what happened there? Yeah, I just, I really like pop music. At one point, I really wanted to do, like, an entire album of pop songs. I surveyed my Patreon supporters, and they weren't really into that idea, so I decided not to. I really love pop music. And,
that's a shame. I'd love to hear that, because, I mean, just, not to, sorry to interrupt, just the idea that sounds fascinating, because I'm not a huge fan of pop music, but I like it when a lot of pop music has melodies that I really do like.
Yes. And yes, exactly. Yeah, because I find that sometimes the lyrics in pop music are kind of dumb. So I really like doing no offense to any pop musicians out there, but I really like doing instrumental arrangements of pop music, because then you just get the melody and no lyrics.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, if I don't know a lot about all of the people who listen to this show, but I don't know how many Katy Perry fans there are or aren't in our audience. But seriously, listen to what he did to this song. It's gorgeous, and I would love to hear. I mean, I'm a patron now, not a high tier one, but I've been a patron here for a little while, and I can definitely say that I would be totally into hearing you do more stuff like that. Not that I dislike your video game music stuff, because. Good Lord, that's actually what I'm there for. But hearing your takes on other things, I like it when people take songs that are and completely change the instrumentation of them, you know, to put just a different spin on things. And you know, I'm a big fan of Banjo Gaiole, who we're interviewing next week, and he does a lot of that kind of stuff too. And every now and then he'll do a pop song, like he did Land Down Under, and not that's a pop song. I guess that's technically a pop song, but
yeah,
you know,
it's 80s pop, but
yeah. But you know, anytime that kind of stuff pops up, I'm always like, it's a really nice surprise. Like maybe if it's not even just a whole album of it, just like to pepper one in there every now and then, you'd be like, all right, that's freaking cool, man.
Yeah. And I would love to do, cause this year I kind of want to branch out and, do some stuff that's, you know, other than video game music. And I'm thinking of just doing those as free videos and not charging my patrons for. Oh, and by the way, I really appreciate your support on Patreon. That's really nice of you.
You're very welcome.
And but yeah, so I want to I kind of want to branch out this year and try some other stuff and maybe not charge my patrons for it.
That's a pretty neat way of going about it.
Yeah.
I'd be thrilled with it. I listen to just about I listen to everything you post anyway, so it's not going too far out of the way. Back to the video game stuff. How do you pick which games you're going to do next? Because I mean I've definitely seen, you know, you've got a couple of Donkey Kong Country things in there. You've got some Mario stuff. Definitely, I can tell you're a fan of Banjo-Kazooie. I love that you've done the Chrono Trigger ones, and even throwing that Chrono Cross one in there, because that's like the game that's like the biggest disparity between how much I like the game and how much I like its music.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah, well, sorry, that was my phone. Well, I just, I don't know. Sometimes it's really random, because like sometimes I just have no ideas at all of what to do next. And then all of a sudden something will just pop into my head, you know, from one of the games that I used to play when I was a kid. And it'll just get stuck in my head, and I'm like, okay, I have to record this. But yeah, like usually I have like no idea what I'm going to do next until I'm like about to finish my next video. And then suddenly I'll just get an idea. Yeah. And actually this year on Patreon, I started a suggestion box, because I'm running out of ideas, honestly. So I want to hear what people want to hear. Like I want to see like what they want to hear on my channel.
How long does it take you to put one of these together? So like, all right, you've decided this is the song I'm doing. I'm doing, you know, whatever it is, and then from yes, this is the thing, to a video. Is it like a week? Like 2 weeks? Like I'm an uncreative ass. I haven't played my guitar in a while. Chris and I had the world's greatest band that has ever existed that nobody ever listened to. So, like, we kind of understand a little bit from, like, you know, I have a bug for a song, and then to actually putting it down, but...
Recording a full, like, because you do all the pieces of it, you know?
The whole thing.
And then you shoot it, too, which I guess is, like, is the videos of you doing it the actual you performing it? Like, is that what's going into the recording, or are you like playing over or something that you previously recorded? Or
yeah, so the audio and video are separate. I do first. Okay, so first I do the arrangement. I just arrange it in MuseScore. That takes about a day or so. That's the easiest part. And then recording the audio is also pretty easy. That can take about, I don't know, up to a week, I guess. And then the video is the really hard part. Because my studio is really tiny, so I don't have a whole lot of room to move around. So when I have to have all that like lighting equipment and the camera and, you know, all that stuff out in my studio, it takes a really long time to like switch to a new instrument or change the angle or whatever. That part can take I don't know, a couple of weeks. From there, I just you know, I have to edit the video, mix the audio. I guess the entire process can take about 4 weeks or so.
That still seems relatively quick.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't seem to be all that bad to completely re-instrumentize, if... I don't know if that's a word, but it fucking is now. It's good, right?
Yeah, that was a great word. I like it.
Like, to just completely redo a song that... See, Chris, I think the problem is that you and I just weren't good enough. That's what it comes down to.
You're not the first to tell me that. let's see. Speaking of your studio, actually, all right. So, what is all the stuff you got in the background? Like, I know there's. I keep seeing the bottom of the poster. Is that a some sort of the Wizard poster you've got?
Oh yeah,
behind you.
Yeah, yeah. So, I got that at a screening of the Wizard about 10 years ago at the Alamo Draft House. They had a couple of the actors and the director there. It was a really cool event. And beforehand, they hooked up. I don't know how they did this. They somehow. I guess it was the projector. They hooked up. Super Mario Brothers to the projector, and so people were like playing Super Mario on the theater screen. It was really cool. Yeah, so yeah, that's just a Wizard poster.
So you are a fan of the Wizard?
Yes, I am, very much so.
Ah, me too. Love that movie.
Yeah, it's great.
Did you like? I have no concept of how old you are. Did you catch that in theaters? And was introduced to Mario 3? Or
I'm not quite that old. I could be. I'm very close, but I didn't see it in theaters. I think I saw it on like VHS or something.
Yeah, I honestly can't remember if I saw that in theaters. I think I did, because I know that's how I found out about Mario 3, and like I lost my freaking mind at the end of that movie. Like, there's a Mario 3? What? And then I went over to my cousin's house not long after I first saw it, and he had the game, and was like, lost my freaking mind. Man, I love Mario 3.
Yeah, it's a great game. Yeah, yeah. It was, honestly, like, that's my favorite Mario game, at least from the side-scrollers. I just think it was really perfectly constructed, and I loved all the music.
Yeah, music in that is great. Did you play Mario Maker?
I did not, no.
There's really, I love getting a chance to nerd out with people about video game music. There's a really, really cool thing that they do in Mario Maker is when you're actually constructing the levels, they are, so when you're playing the levels, that plays the music as they originally appeared. And then when you're constructing the levels, it kind of makes this crazy counter melody version of the song that plays, which is with like modern instruments and stuff. It's absolutely nuts. And the main overworld theme from Super Mario 3 is the craziest one, because it really hits the reggae really hard. And I do a video game music podcast too called Waveback, and just a couple of months ago I did an episode where I layered the original NES tracks over the counter melodies, and the Super Mario 3 one in particular is absolutely awesome sounding, like with all these extra just kind of like a horn section added to it to just kind of make it sound more like a, it sounds very more reggae-ish than even the original version. And it's totally, totally freaking cool.
That is really cool. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I haven't gotten an opportunity to play it yet.
I can't recommend it enough. It's fantastic. I hope it comes to Switch so I can play it all over again. So.
Yeah.
All right, so I think what we're going to do right now is we're going to take ourselves a quick break. We're going to do a couple of commercials, and when we come back, we'll talk a lot more with Mr. Poop Poop Fart here. And you're listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com, so stick around.
And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, do you like dating sims, Chris?
I do.
Do you? That's weird.
I do.
You know...
remember Sprung on DS, that launch game? That was the best.
It certainly was.
Sprung? What was that? Is that what that game was called? I'm going to look it up. You keep doing this. I'm going to look that up.
You know, those Japanese video games where you play as a cute high school boy and make conversation decisions in an attempt to woo a cute yet awkward high school girl? Do you love the bright colors, the happy music, the flirty fun, and the unsettling psychological terror that leaves you curled in a ball, openly sobbing on your bed? Well, that last part isn't part of your typical dating sim, and that's because Doki Doki Literature Club isn't your typical dating sim. It may start out colorful, but according to Geekade's Jonathan Fugger, things get grim. I know, but I'm always going to say Fugger because it's way cooler. I love Jonathan. He knows this. Find out why so many people are talking about this unassuming, genre-breaking game in DDLC OMFG located in the Think Tank.
Sorry, he came up with his own title for that. He comes up with all his own titles. He's more clever than I am. Then,
he really is.
Over on our TV podcast, Evan, Karen, and I talk about the sci-fi original series The Magician, The Magicians, plural, and how it's totally not Harry Potter. It's got a dude with moths for face. It's got two characters that have really edgy magical sex while floating to the ceiling. And, you know, we talk about that show. And then we move on to discussing our never-ending love for all things Nathan Fillion, why Chris Carter is full of something that isn't good X-Files episodes, my inability to recognize the difference between CG and puppets in the new Muppet Babies promo images. Seriously, I thought they were puppets. And more. Don't miss this week's episode, episode 114. I don't know what we're calling the episode yet.
Very professional.
Things I should have done beforehand.
I know the answer to this question already. Did you read any of the book, The Magicians?
No, actually. I didn't even know it was a book. We were actually talking about that on the show a bit, how it was we didn't really know much about it going in. So we were into this like completely blind. Oh, the episode is called Extra Strength Bitchy.
Anyway, I didn't love the book. I don't
I'm
know
sure
if that
I didn't like you
not.
Either.
I probably didn't. I don't know. I wanted to like it way more than I did. I felt the same way about the show. Anyway, finally, almost nobody's favorite holiday except mine, because it's my fucking anniversary. Valentine's Day, because we're that couple, is upon us. So, 13 years? 13 years? 13 years. My wife is right here, so I had to have confirmation. It's our anniversary of dating. We didn't get married on Valentine's Day. We're not those people. Those people, we talk about them and we call them those people. We did start dating on Valentine's, though, because we are those people.
Thanks for clearing that up.
Trish Reyes got herself into the spirit by writing an all-new Geekade Top 10 list about TV romances. Can an NYPD detective fall for an ancient winged monster? Can a pointy-nosed major and a shapeshifter who can't get ears right make it work? God, can they? Will we ever forgive Joss Whedon for his various relationship murders? Find out, kids, in Geekade Top 10 TV Romances.
You can catch all this great stuff plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at Geekade.com.
Fuck, that was professional.
Felt good. Thank you. Thank you. I felt good about it. Alright, and we are back. We are still here with Mr. Fart, or PPF, or Poop Poop, whatever you wanna call him. I'm going with all three. And let's talk a little bit about games, because we talked a whole lot about your music and you being a musician, and I wanna know more about you as a gamer. So what kind of games do you play?
Oh boy. This is where I'm gonna reveal myself as a fraud.
Sweet. An expose. Somebody bring out the gotcha dancers.
So these days, I actually don't play a whole lot of video games. I play a lot of PC games, but I haven't had a console since, like, I want to say the GameCube, maybe? Yeah, really? I think the GameCube was the last console I had.
So you're an Xbox owner?
Yes.
Sorry, it's the thing. I know, I'm a dick. I'm sorry. No, that, like, it's kind of nice now that you don't necessarily have to own a console to play almost everything that comes out. I mean, really what you're missing out on is like Nintendo and Sony exclusives. But for the most part, I mean, you still have access to damn near everything.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, have you guys heard of the Raspberry Pi?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
I'm pointing to it on this audio podcast.
On that note, I built a retro Pi system recently. And I loaded a bunch of old Nintendo games, Super Nintendo games on it. And I've been playing that a lot. It's really cool. It's, I don't know, like, I don't know why someone would buy an NES Classic when you can just do that.
Well, that's actually a pretty good question. I mean, there's, because I have a Raspberry Pi and an NES Classic and a Super NES Classic because I'm a whore. But,
yes. I mean, so if they were easy to find, I would totally buy one. But I guess I just don't understand, like, the whole, you know, the hysteria about, like, people buying them and putting on eBay and stuff and marking them up, like, 500%.
Yeah, no, the hysteria is absolutely stupid on those things. Like, that's ridiculous. And lately, I've been seeing Super NES Classics in stores. Like, I go into Target and they have them. So,
cool.
It's kind of nice to see those around. And that's a really nice thing. I think really the, because that was a question that I thought about a bunch because, you know, I have the Raspberry Pi and I also have those guys. And I think it's really the usability because, like, for a lot of people, for I would say a considerable chunk of people buying a Raspberry Pi is just, okay, you buy it, you build it, you set it up and let it go to town. But as Dan and I have worked lots of time in video game retail, your average person is not going to get that. They're just not going to understand loading things onto an SD card. And, you know, these things are literally plug and play, the NES Classic and the Super NES Classic. And
yeah,
they're really cool. The Super NES Classic is a... You know, the Super NES Classic is phenomenal. I mean, finished version of Star Fox 2 is just a freaking cool thing to have. But the controller cords are a tad on the short side, but they work with 8-bit do controllers, so that's nice. NES Classic, definitely, like, that one really blew my mind on the whole. Oh my god, I have to have this thing, pay hundreds of dollars for it, because, like, it doesn't even emulate the games perfectly. Like,
right,
a lot of the sound effects are screwed up on it, and... I mean, they're really easy to jailbreak, too. I have my NES Classic loaded with the whole library. plays most of them okay.
Oh, nice.
So, like, you were playing on a Raspberry Pi. What have you been playing on it?
Yeah, I've been playing, let's see. Do you remember that Goof Troop game for the SNES?
Yeah. That game's weird.
Dude, that game is so awesome. Like, that game has held up so well.
It really has.
Yeah.
That's from
I like that one.
People who made Resident Evil, I think. That's just,
is it really?
I'm pretty sure. Keep talking. I'm going to look that up.
Okay, so let's see. I like all of the Mario games.
I know. Shinji Mikami was the designer for Goof Troop.
Oh,
that's
nice.
Weird. That's weird, but I suppose that makes sense.
From Goof Troop to Resident Evil.
Yeah, I can see it.
Oh, he did the Aladdin Super Nintendo one, too. That was a pretty good game. Genesis one was better. But...
anyway, sorry, Chris interrupted you because he's very rude.
No, that's it. Yeah, let's see. Oh, and Bomberman. I love the whole Bomberman series.
Now, that's something I've tried to get into, and it's never really grabbed me. Now,
I'm not a huge fan of, like, just the adventure mode or whatever, but I love the Battle Royale with multiple people. Like, that's always a lot of fun.
I think that's my big problem with it is that I've never played it multiplayer, because none of my friends had it when I was a kid. It would have had to have been something that I got my hands on later in life. And I remember reading about it in magazines and being like, oh, Bomberman looks cool. But nobody I knew had it. None of our rental stores had it. Like, nobody had Bomberman around me. So,
oh, man.
I missed the boat on Bomberman.
Oh, man.
But he's a super cool character. I wish he would be in Smash Brothers. He would be neat.
Yeah, that'd be
did
awesome.
You ever, did you ever play that Wario Blast game, the Bomberman Wario crossover?
No, I've never heard of that.
It was on Black and White Game Boy. It's like, it's just Bomberman, except Wario's in it for some reason, dropping bombs all over the place, because I guess Wario likes bombs.
Because he's Wario. That makes perfect sense, Chris.
He's a versatile character. He goes all over the map. And I was like, I even remember the commercials for it back in the day, like, you know, big animated Wario on screen. You can YouTube the commercials for it. Wario Blast for Game Boy. If you like Bomberman, give it a try. There's my official
there's your official plug.
My official
now,
plug.
Are you do you avoid more modern games, or is it just like a time sink?
Yeah, it's
like,
definitely
I
a time
just
sink.
Don't have time for this.
You know, I was really interested in the Nintendo Switch, and my cousin got one, and I was playing around with it, and like I think I'm gonna have to pick one of those up. I haven't had a console in a long time, but the Nintendo Switch looks really interesting.
I was gonna say, if time's your thing, I've been into game consoles for the longest time, but I'm such a huge fan of the Switch because I'm playing more games now than I have been able to in years because of the versatility of the system. You know, after the podcast's over tonight, I'm going to go upstairs and play Dandara in bed until I fall asleep because I can just take it with me. I have a dock down in my basement. I have a dock up in my living room. If my son wants to play ukulele, I'll, you know, just attach it to the whatever TV he's in front of and we'll play ukulele for a little bit. It's a great system, and especially if you like old school kinds of games, it's just packed with really great indie games that are just fantastic. Like, they look like Super Nintendo games on crack.
You were just playing through Celeste, right? Like, you finished that?
Celeste was so good. That game is, I made it to the top of the mountain. There's still a ton more to do in the game, but I moved on to another game because I just want to keep seeing more things. But great indie kind of stuff. If you like old school platformers, that's a great system to have.
I love the portability.
Three Colossi into Shadow of the Colossus, and then ran out of time because, you know, like being an adult. But that game is fucking stuff. We'll talk about that another time.
We will. Not,
so I'm with you though, man. Like I feel that a lot too. Of like so many of the big games that come out now are. You know, like, well, shit, I don't have 40 hours to put into this.
Right,
I just
yeah.
don't, and if I don't, and if I'm not going to beat it, like, I'm just going to go back and play something, like, on a Raspberry Pi, like, I'm going to go back and play Streets of Rage, because, like, I can finish that in, like, a half hour.
Right,
I'm going to go in and rock some Streets of Rage 2 and call it a day.
Yeah, and PC games are definitely just more convenient for me, because first of all, you don't have to buy a console. Secondly, like, I'm at my PC, like, 90% of the time, so I'm already there, so I just load up a game.
Makes sense. So what kind of, what did you grow up on playing? Like what were the systems you had when you were a kid? Were you, I think I know the answer just based on your music selections. Were you a Nintendo kid or a Sega kid, or what did you have?
Yeah, I'm definitely a Nintendo kid. So yeah, so the very first console that I got was the NES, and then I got all of the Nintendo systems up to the GameCube. Yeah, I think the most memorable one for me was the N64. That's the one that I had the most fun with. And I particularly loved all of the games that Rare made. Obviously, I'm a huge Banjo-Kazooie fan, but I also liked, Conker's Bad Fur Day. That was one of my favorites. I love that game.
Tell me you're going to do Conker's Bad Fur Day.
I would love to. I really want to arrange Wendy.
I was just going to say, please say Wendy and Company.
Yes. That's one of those projects that's probably going to take a considerable amount of effort because, you know, there's a lot of different sections where the instruments drop in and drop out.
Changes to every single flavor of instrument imaginable. That song's nuts.
Yes. So it's probably going to be kind of like Gruntilda's Lair where I have to, you know, there's a lot of different sections that I have to get through. But I would love to do that one at some point.
Damn good game.
Yes.
So N64. All right. See, I'm a diehard Nintendo guy myself, and N64 was that generation has kind of always been one of my least favorites because just the visuals. But right. I mean, the fun that I did have with it was, I mean, God, seeing Super Mario 64 for the first time was like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Ocarina of Time, an amazing game. And I love puzzle games, and it has the best version of Dr. Mario and one of my favorite versions of Tetris on it. So N64 is a cool platform. We were just talking last week. We had Adam Shube, Square Painter, on, and he despises the N64. He was that was a fun conversation. Going to week to back to back weeks with the N64 fan and an N64 hater. So all right, so you started on Nintendo and you got Super Nintendo, moved on to N64, and then you got GameCube. So what would you say your favorite game is?
I would have to go with Banjo-Kazooie. I don't know if that's obvious. I don't know how obvious it is that I'm like a huge Banjo-Kazooie fan just from looking at my channel. But yeah, the music is really great. I love the music, but it's also just, I don't know, it's just a really well-designed game. I like the way it progresses and how you learn new moves and stuff. And yeah, it's just a really perfectly designed game in my opinion.
Have you messed with ukulele at all?
Okay, so... yeah, this goes back to the PC-only thing. I was going to download the PC version, but I read that there were some issues with controller support, so I was going to hold off until they updated that, but I haven't checked on that lately.
Okay. Well, if you get a Switch, get it for Switch. This is actually really interesting, because Banjo-Kazooie is one of those games that I never gave enough of a shot. I think it was because just when it came out, I was working in a Funko Land at the time, and it just didn't really, I always wanted to play it, but I never got around to buying it. And so I didn't really have the time to put into it, but I really was really interested in picking up ukulele. And after I finished Super Mario Odyssey, my son, he liked playing that game with me, and I wanted to pick up something that was like a similar platform or just something open and cool. And, so we downloaded ukulele, and he's absolutely over the moon for the game. He loves it. He loves the characters. And what it does is it kind of removes the biggest problem I had with Banjo was my biggest problem with N64 stuff in general was the visuals. The stretched out textures, the overly blocky graphics. I always kind of had a real issue with that. And some games transcend that, you know, like you look at something like Metal Gear Solid that just embraces the stupidity of overly pixelated characters delivering important sounding monologues, or Ocarina of Time, where like, yes, the textures are hideous, but you can't not look at that sunset and think that's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. But I was really curious how ukulele really stacks up to Banjo-Kazooie, because I might want to go back and really try to play that game sometime, because for all of its flaws, I mean, ukulele is, you can tell it's not as polished as something like Mario Odyssey, because really what in the world is, but when I'm getting into the brass tacks of it, it's really, really fun and very funny. Is Banjo-Kazooie funny?
Yeah, it's very funny. There's a lot of humor that would probably seem inappropriate for children, but it's also the sort of stuff that children probably wouldn't pick up on. It has a lot of that type of innuendo in there.
That's that. That makes me happy. There's definitely some of that in Yooka-Laylee.
Yeah.
The snake character that's
the trouser snake.
Trouser snake, and their boat is called the Batship Crazy, and Dan's a huge God of War fan, and there's a mine cart in the game that is named Kartos, the God of Ore.
Yeah. I just
actually laughed out loud at that.
There's definitely a lot cool of that stuff in Banjo-Kazooie.
All right, so Banjo-Kazooie, favorite game. Who was your favorite composer?
Video game?
Yeah.
It's definitely going to have to be Kirk Cope.
Okay.
I think Koji Kondo comes in a close second also.
Awesome. Now, not to delve too much deeper back into the video game music stuff. I've noticed you covered some Kondo's work and obviously Kirk Cope and some David Wise. I don't think you've covered anything Hip Tanaki yet, have you?
I don't think so. No.
Consider this my formal request.
Okay. As a Hip Patreon.
As a $1 patron. No, I mean, I think Dan and I had this conversation a while back. We were trying to decide, like, who do we like more, Hip Tanaka or Koji Kondo? Because it's really hard. For me, it's such a hard thing to do because Koji Kondo has written, you know, the Super Mario Brothers theme, like so many really amazing pieces. But like, I did an episode of Waveback where I was comparing the soundtrack to Super Mario Brothers to Super Mario Land, and it's like, Hip Tanaka's Super Mario Land soundtrack is so amazing. I have a hard time choosing between those. So it's
We just settled on Weezer, which was weird, but. Feel it was a good choice.
Agreed. So what else do you do? Like, besides this, you know, the video game stuff, you don't play a ton of games, you make some amazing videos. What else do you do to fill up your time?
Honestly, the YouTube videos take up a huge chunk of my time, so I'm doing that most of the time, but there are so many different parts of the process that it never really gets boring. Like, I have to edit video, I have to mix audio, record audio, film stuff. It's, you know, it eats up a lot of my time, but it's pretty diverse in terms of what I have to do. So it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. So what do you have on deck as far as, like, I know the patrons got to hear a piece of something from Doki Doki Literature Club. Like, do you have anything else on deck right now, or are you just waiting to see what happens with this whole suggestion box system?
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting to see what happens there. I don't have any plans beyond Doki Doki Literature Club. I can tell you some stuff that I've been wanting to do, but it's either too complicated or, I don't know, I don't know how it's going to pan out. I really want to do a forest interlude from Donkey Kong at some point. I want to do Rainbow Road from the N64 version of Mario Kart.
Awesome.
Yes, and let's see. I think that's about all. Oh, yeah. Okay, so this is not a video game track, but are you familiar with the Attack on Titan theme song from, like, the first season?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I want to do that at some point, just because I have some cool ideas for the cinematography, but, yeah, I don't know.
Now, you mentioned, this just popped in my head, you mentioned some game consoles. Did you ever have any handhelds? Like, did you, you know, do a Game Boy at any point?
Yeah, I had a Game Boy. I feel like I've had a few other handhelds, but I can't remember them at the moment. But yes, I definitely had a Game Boy.
Hmm. All right, cool. All right. I know I had other questions. Oh, that was the other one. I actually kind of segued out of it because I'm really good at this. Are there any other like YouTube creators that you like? Any other, like you said, there's tons of folks out there doing video game covers. Like, do you listen to other folks and what they do, and are there others that you are fans of?
Definitely. Let's see. I'm afraid to, like, omit people, but I do want to mention David Ramos. Do you know the Ocarina guy?
I actually don't.
Oh, okay, yeah. He does Ocarina covers of mostly video game tracks, and he actually lives around here. He lives pretty close to me, so we met up one time, and we were gonna film a video together, but everything went horribly wrong, so we never got to upload it. yeah, that was great. And let me see. I really like there's this lady named Luna Lee who does covers on the gayageum. It's like a Korean zither type instrument. Let's see. I'm trying to, like, think of, like, smaller people. that might not have as much exposure.
This is totally self-serving. I'm writing down everything.
Yeah, this isn't for our listeners. This is just for Chris.
I would like more to listen to.
Yeah. Here, I'm going to open up my YouTube subscription box real quick. Feel free to continue to ask me questions.
What's your favorite color?
I'm going to have to go with green on that one.
Okay, good.
That is
good
the answer, correct answer. Answer.
Thank you.
It's the correct answer.
I'm a blue fan myself. I like blue.
And that's why nobody likes you.
Oh, here's a good one. Do you know Sam Griffin from the Super Guitar Brothers?
No.
Yeah, he does. See,
this really is riveting, Chris.
I'm gonna.
He does a. Okay, so my primary instrument is the classical guitar, so I really like classical guitar stuff. Mm-hmm. He does solo classical guitar arrangements of video game stuff. He's really good.
Oh, that sounds like what I'm looking for. Awesome. I will look that up immediately, if not sooner.
Let me see if I see anything else exciting here. Hold on.
Oh, I'm holding on.
Okay. Here's my last one. Their channel name is apparently Moonbo Movie Music, but their band name is Meinung, and they do... It's like a three-part trio, I guess. It's two guitars and a stand-up bass, and yeah, they do a lot of video game stuff. They're really great.
Awesome. I will look up these things. As Sam Griffin in particular sounds right up my alley. I'm always looking for acoustic-sounding video game stuff. I always wished that I was better at it so that I could do it myself, but I'm a drummer, so I get very frustrated with guitar very quickly unless I'm just pounding out basic chords. Like I would absolutely love, and I've challenged Ollie to do this before, and he has not yet done it. The boss music from the Wily stages in Mega Man 3 is just an absolutely insane piece of music, and I would love to hear that done on acoustic guitar, but probably never gonna happen because that song is bananas. All right, well, we got to ask you the question that we always ask every guest we've ever had on the show, and it's a very important question. So I want you to think carefully about your answer. What bread is the best bread?
Okay, are we talking about, like, specific brands here?
Let's go with yes to all.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go with, let's see. I'm going to go with Oro wheat bread.
That's a new answer. I'm unfamiliar with Oro wheat bread.
Oh, man. You should look that up. You should write that down and look it up with my YouTube suggestions.
How do you spell it?
It's O-R... O-W-E-A-T. Maybe.
Oh, okay.
Spelled like it sounds, Chris. Phonetically. That's how you fucking spell it.
Good times. All right. Well, I mean, I think I've run through pretty much all the questions I had for you. Dan, do you have anything else you would like to ask Mr. Fart here?
No, the only... You said one of the other creators lives around here. Where are you located?
I live in Austin, Texas.
In Texas. Everybody in the fucking interview now is in Texas, and I left Texas, and I feel like maybe I should go back.
You should go back.
You should come back.
Get the hell away from me.
Get the hell out of Jersey. Do you ever, like... Is there any plan, because the music scene in Austin is crazy and it's awesome and there's so much creativity and stuff going on. Have you ever thought about, like, going out and playing some of your stuff live? Like, obviously you can't go out and do the one-man band thing, like, with a fucking banjo on you, you know, and the drum and cymbals on your knees and shit. Like, have you ever put any thought into, like, maybe going out and doing a performance with it, like, at one of the... billion and a half venues that are out in Austin?
I've never considered that. I feel like I'm more of a recording artist.
Okay.
I guess that's a nice way of saying that I really suck at playing live. But yeah,
that's fair.
Recording. I like the freedom that it affords you with, like, you know, you can, like, change the sound of each of the tracks afterwards.
Right.
Stuff doesn't have to sound, like, absolutely perfect when you're first recording it. So yeah, I'm not really much of a live musician, I don't think.
That's fair. I find that, you know, I find that idea interesting because, like, most of, like you said earlier, a a lot of the video game covers are like punk rock covers or like metal covers of songs, and like most of the bands that have been out doing covers, and maybe I'm talking out of my ass here, but I don't think I am. Most of the bands that like go out and do the shows are like the mini bosses and groups like that are going out and playing like punk shows,
right?
You know,
yeah.
Or you have the classical like stadium amphitheater crowd going to see like Final Fantasy composed, you know, with a full orchestra and that sort of thing. And then there's certain other people like Mega Ran who goes out and does like hip hop shows, but they're not covers, they're just songs about video games. But like what you do and like what Banjo Guy Ollie does and a lot of the other guys that are and girls that are out doing stuff, there doesn't seem to be a live venue for that. And I don't really know if that's a question or not. I just, it's amusing and I find that interesting.
You know what I've always wanted to do is create like a bluegrass band that plays like bluegrass versions of video game tracks. I think that would actually that might actually work in Austin.
100% that would work in Austin.
Yeah, it would.
Yes.
You could be the house band at the Jester King Brewery and like just rock out bluegrass versions of video game tunes. I love that idea.
Yes, I would love to do that, but I don't know anyone else who's like nerdy enough to do that, who like also plays violin and banjo or whatever. So I don't know, someday.
All right, Chris, going to Austin.
We're going to Austin. I'll pick my banjo back up and try to get good at it. Wait, it's funny you mentioned that. I was living in Brooklyn for a while, and my roommate Ben, he was a really, really good classical guitarist, and the two of us legitimately tried to put together a band that played acoustic covers of the Katamari soundtrack, but we just couldn't find enough people to get involved, because, man, that was fun. Listening to him figure that stuff out was ridiculous.
That was all I had. I just found that.
That's it? That's it? That's You're it. Tapped out?
I'm tapped out. I am exhausted, Chris, and I apologize.
That's okay. I'm also exhausted. Exercise doesn't agree with me.
So stop doing it.
Yeah, I mean, the only other question that keeps popping into my head that I keep forgetting to ask is, you went back and re-recorded your Banjo Kazooie one. Have you ever considered going back and re-recording more of your older stuff?
Yeah, I would love to do that. I don't know if my patrons would feel like ripped off that I'm re-recording something that I already recorded. There's one thing that I really want to re-record. I don't know if you're familiar with the athletic theme from like Super Mario World, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't remember which one.
You did, what was it, specifically Hayden's cover of that, right?
Yeah. Yes. So I would love to redo that now that I sort of know what I'm doing. but I don't know. I don't know if people would go for that.
Well, I mean, I wrote about you a while back on the Stone Age Gamer blog page, and one of the things I wrote about was I linked to your old cover of the banjo song and then the new one, and it's I find it fascinating when folks like you go back and redo something that you previously done, because it's always really fun to see how far you've come, you know. We keep mentioning Ollie. He recently redid his first cover, was a banjo cover of Castlevania, and then he recently redid it, and it's night and day just seeing that kind of difference. And you know, in particular, I was like looking at one of your early videos of you the Super Mario Brothers 2 Overworld theme, and yeah, just thinking about the kind of crazy stuff you do now with all the PVC pipes and whatnot, like that'd be a really interesting song to see some kind of like crazy take on, because it's such a great tune. And I'll speak for myself and say I'd love to see that kind of stuff pop up, because I wouldn't feel ripped off, one, because I haven't been a patron that long. I mean, you're talking about covering stuff you did like, you know, 9-10 years ago.
Right.
I think the point of the statute of limitations on that has passed, so I think you'd be in the clear.
Yeah, maybe I'll go back and revisit some of that stuff. You have a good point. I do. When I redid my Spiral Mountain cover, it was really cool to listen to them side by side and see how much I had improved just in terms of like audio production. Yeah, so I'd love to do that with more of my stuff. So yeah, maybe someday.
Now, do you feel like you've gotten to be a a better musician over the years. I mean, this is something that I have a hard time, you know, viewing because, like I said, I'm a drummer. I hit things with sticks. So, like, I see all the kind of, you know, the stuff that you do, and it's like, well, all right, well, he's always been really, really good at this kind of stuff. But do you feel like you've gotten, you know, technically better? And I guess kind of segue off of that, do you have, like, were you, you know, classically trained in anything? Did you take lessons, or is this just shit you do?
Yeah, so I started with the classical guitar in high school. I took private lessons, and I also took like a classical guitar ensemble class, and I did a little bit of that in college also. Other than that, I haven't really studied any other instruments. And yeah, I feel like I've improved a lot as a musician over the years, but more importantly, like one of the things that's been really elusive to me has been mixing. And I feel like I've really improved with my mixing abilities over the years. And I've been, that's something that I've been consciously trying to work on. I've read a lot of books about it. Yeah, I feel like I've gotten a lot better at mixing.
The one thing that kind of struck me was in watching the Wind Waker one you did earlier today is the, you were playing on the mandolin in that?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so what the I have seen you mention your Patreon posts about your fingernails, and I never noticed it before this one. But what was the Super Mario 3 one, right? You wrote a graphic about, like, the king was telling you to clip your fingernails.
Yeah.
I can't believe I didn't ask. How the hell did you do that? All that animation and stuff. Like, did you do that, or did somebody else do that for you? Or
yeah, one of the things that I like to do with these projects is learn new skills. And actually, that's my primary objective when I'm choosing a new project to work on. I like to be able to learn something new. And in that case, I decided I wanted to learn how to, like, animate stuff in DaVinci Resolve. So yes, I did that myself.
So if in case anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, he did a cover of Super Mario Brothers 3 music. It was a medley of stuff. It's really quite excellent. But the beginning and the end of it are these, like, you know, essentially recreations of the castle scenes where you're talking to the transformed king and little version of himself as Mario sprite, and it's really cool. The I noticed that the backgrounds were, you know, the whole thing was in widescreen because I guess, you know, YouTube. Did you draw extra stuff there? Like, did you draw all of that? Like, how many of the assets were lifted, and what did you create yourself?
I downloaded the sprites from some website, and shout out to that random website that I don't remember the name of, and then I just I kind of copied and pasted stuff on the edges to make it widescreen, and then I redrew the Mario sprite to look more similar to me, and I think the rest was just directly from the game.
Nice. So anyway, sorry, I went on this weird tangent. Like the all right, so the mandolin. Pulling it back to that, I know every time I've ever listened to that song, Dragon Roost Island, I've always just kind of imagined the just actual strumming up and down really quickly. But I noticed that you kind of fanned your fingers across the strings. Is that how that stuff is typically played, or is a stylistic thing that you do? Or
I actually have no idea how it's played on the mandolin typically. I think on the mandolin you're supposed to use a pick. I'm not too sure. But yeah, that technique is called rasgueado, and it's a technique from flamenco guitar. Yeah, I just decided to try applying it to the mandolin. I actually didn't even realize that you were supposed to use a pick on the mandolin until somebody pointed it out in the comments. But yeah, so I just went my own way there, I guess.
That was like, I remember watching it earlier when I was at work today, and I was like, wait a second, hold, what is this? I kept like zooming into that one little corner, like watching you do that, like, That sounds flawless. I never would have thought to do that. That's ridiculously cool. I you know, again, not to just be, you know, gushing over you or whatever, but I'm really impressed with how accurate you are with this stuff. Like, you know, Dan was mentioning before, a lot of the like punk bands and metal bands cover this kind of stuff, and I love that stuff. I mean, you know, back when the mini bosses were first doing their thing, there wasn't a lot of folks out there covering video game music, and now it's everywhere. But I listen to video game music, pretty much all I listen to all the time, and so whenever somebody covers something and they get something that's just like slightly off, it always bugs me. And like, you did the Flower Garden from Yoshi's Island, like that the snare drum hits that aren't as consistent as you would think they are when you just kind of fill in the notes with your head. Like, you hit those exactly as they appear in the Super Nintendo track, and I really appreciate the attention to detail in the stuff that you do. It's very, very cool.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I try really hard to get all of the exact details as correctly as possible, because I know that there are people listening who, you know, like, that's their favorite track or whatever, and they're going to notice if something's off. So I try really hard to get just, like, the right, like, everything exactly right.
Well, you do a damn good job of it.
Thank you.
Have you, I noticed that a lot of what you do does revolve around 16-bit or later. Like, is, like, 8-bit music, more chip-tuning stuff, something you'd be more interested in doing more of in the future?
Yeah, actually, I have a preference for doing stuff that sounds more synthetic. So, like, stuff from, you know, from the Nintendo would be great, because I feel like I have more freedom to use my own sounds, because, you know, it doesn't really sound like any acoustic instrument to begin with, so I can choose my own sounds to work with. So, yeah, I guess I actually did notice that I do more 16-bit stuff.
I mean, nothing against that. I mean, you've picked some of my favorites, and you know, like you don't really hear a lot of folks, or at least I haven't heard a lot of folks cover Delightful Specchio, and I was thrilled when I found that you did. but yeah, that makes a lot of sense with the NES tracks, and well, I'll have to get on your suggestion spreadsheet and throw a couple things your way. I do notice a distinct lack of Mega Man. Like, everyone covers Mega Man tunes.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not like a huge fan of Mega Man. I don't know if that's offensive to anyone, but I'm not a huge fan of the game. I do like the music, though. It's just that I haven't played the games that much, so the music hasn't like gotten stuck in my head or anything. So but yeah, I would love to do some Mega Man music if you have any suggestions.
Absolutely. Magnet Man stage from Mega Man 3. It's my favorite Mega Man tune. None
Magnet Man.
Suggested.
Okay. Wait, Magnet I'm going to write this down. Hold on.
So, I mean, now, say this suggestion box thing rolls well, and, like, you get a bunch of really cool suggestions. What's the plan of action from there? Like, are you actually going to go play the games to get the music in context, or are you going to find the songs and go at it that way?
I'm probably just going to... Yeah, I'm probably just going to listen on YouTube, to be honest with you. I think that getting context is important, but it might be, you know, too much work to, like, play all those games. So I'm probably just going to listen on YouTube.
That's fair enough. Or maybe watch a playthrough so you can see a little bit more of the context that way.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's a valid point. The context really changes a lot of ways, a lot of the ways people listen to music. Like I said, we do this. I do a video game music podcast, and my co-host and I, we swap each episode of who gets to pick the game. And a lot of times it'll be a game that, you know, one of us will pick a game the other one hasn't played. And so it's always interesting to hear, like, I'll gush about this whole experience of, like, oh, this is the music that plays at this specific part. And then Matt will be like, I didn't get that at all because I've never played this game. And he'll have just a totally different take on what kind of part of the game the music is taking place in or something like that. Like, he'll think it is an underwater level when it's actually a snow level or something like that. And picking up on context like that is really interesting. And I guess in creating a cover, particularly if you're using chiptunes and creating your own instrumentations, would be really interesting to see coming from a perspective of just listening to the music without necessarily the context of the levels of what that music kind of brings out in you and your decisions on instruments you pick.
Right. And actually, speaking of context, you know, Stickerbush Symphony from Donkey Kong, I decided to make that video look really watery just because it reminded me of, like, a water level. And I think David Wise even said one time that he had intended for it to be used in a water level. But obviously in the game, it's, you know, it's the Stickerbush level. But yeah, I sort of took that one out of its original context, and I just decided to make the video look really watery. I don't know. So sometimes I just blatantly ignore stuff from the game, but, you know.
You know, it didn't even strike me because he actually used that in a water level in Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze when that, that song got reprised. A really awesome, interesting new version of it, but it does play in a watery stage. So for some reason, it just didn't even stick out to me. It's like, yeah, that just lines up.
I mean, it sounds really watery. Right. I don't know.
It does. That's a... God, I love the synthesizers in that. Now, okay, so you do use some synthesizers in that, right? Like those weird, like the synthy sounds, like the really deep bassy sounds, like those, I saw you pressing keys. That's not some sort of acoustic instrument I don't know about, right? Like you're actually using synthesizers.
Yeah. So, David Wise's stuff is really synthetic sounding and, it's really hard to get away from using synthesis. Mm-hmm. And like, as hard as I tried to find, you know, equivalent acoustic sounds, sometimes, for David Wise, I just have to just, you know, go with a synthesizer. It's the only way to faithfully reproduce it.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of him, that was, I remember you were trying to raise money in Patreon to get a steel drum so that you could do, Mining Melancholy. And it was, as I was reading that Patreon post, I was like, what the hell part is he talking about that requires a steel drum for? Because like, it never even occurred to me. And I always kind of heard the part that you primarily used that steel drum for is like, you know, one of those 90s orchestra hits, like the duck sound from Mario Paint, you know?
Yeah.
And like, then you played it on a steel drum. I was like, wow, that sounds really good. And I never would have connected that sound with that instrument. That was pretty freaking fascinating.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I was trying to think of a way to reproduce that orchestra hit, and that's the best I could come up with.
Okay, so the question was like, did you hear it as an orchestra hit, or did you hear it as steel drum in your head? Because you know those tracks leave a lot up to interpretation. So,
Yeah, I feel like when I'm listening to David Wise, I don't really hear it as any specific sound. It just, you know, it just sounds really synthetic and. I don't know. I just I just try to find the best instrument that suits the original sound. So I didn't really hear it as anything specific. I just decided that a steel drum would be great for reproducing it.
Huh. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with how familiar are you with David Wise's stuff outside of Donkey Kong Country?
Let's see. I guess not very. I think I'm mostly familiar with his Donkey Kong work.
Does that include, like, you know, I know one of he's so well known for his Donkey Kong Country stuff. I feel like he gets overlooked for particularly the Donkey Kong Land, the first Game Boy One soundtrack, which is really freaking phenomenal 8-bit stuff. Like, you know, did you play Donkey Kong Land? I know you said you had a Game Boy.
No, I don't think I did. I think I only played the ones that were for the Super NES.
Gotcha. I mean, Donkey Kong Land, it doesn't hold up extraordinarily well from a gameplay perspective. You know, it was black and white Game Boy trying to shove Donkey Kong Country into that is rough, but the soundtrack is like classic 8-bit David Wise, which was where I fell in love with this stuff and this work, like Wizards and Warriors and Battletoads. Really, really awesome stuff.
Yeah, Battletoads is great.
More for the suggestion box to save up them tokens. All right, now I think I actually am tapped out. Said I was tapped out like 20 minutes ago. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
All right. Well, I guess then that's going to be it. That's our show. Thank you very much for joining us, PPF. Where can people find more about you and your stuff? Where shall we direct people to listen to your stuff besides your YouTube channel?
Can I promote my URL that I paid money for?
Absolutely. Of course.
I paid money for this URL. I don't know why. It's poopf.art. I thought it would be funny. I don't know. I don't know if it is.
You weren't wrong. It is
great,
funny.
Great.
Poop.
The $12 that I spent has been validated.
F.art?
Yes. It actually just goes to my YouTube channel.
And so it
and
does.
And then if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm a crap crap toot.
It also cracked me up, the that whole business where you said you couldn't, somebody else had taken poop fart on Twitter.
I couldn't get my username on YouTube that I wanted, so I went with poop poop fart. And then on Twitter, I couldn't get poop poop fart, so I had to go with crap crap toot.
Oh, good Lord. I love it. It shit cracks me up. And that was kind of the big question going into this interview, because like, all right, so as somebody who doesn't know anything about you personally, just looking at your online personality, no idea what to expect from this episode.
No, none at all.
Like, all right, so I've listened to the guy talk once, but it was a puppet. And like, he's called Poop Poop Fart, but he does this incredibly gorgeous, intricate music. No idea what to expect.
Well, I hope I didn't disappoint.
No, not in the least. Not at all. I hope I didn't bore you with lots of ridiculous questions about video game music.
Yeah, no, it was fun. This is my first interview.
Oh, that's right. You told me that. Wow, I'm honored. Hopefully, it's not your last. You're obviously hopefully. Welcome to come back anytime.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
So, all right, let's see. That's going to be our show. Join us next week as we wrap up Creators Month with an interview with an old Stone Age Gamer favorite, Banjo Guy Ollie. It's been way too long since we've had him on the show, and we have a lot to catch up on, including his interesting take on the Nintendo-ification of European video game history. It was a topic we were talking about online, and it's really, really interesting because it's something I've never thought about as an American. So, look forward to that. Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade KRIS, and Dan is at?
At Geekade Dan.
And of course, Poop Poop Fart is at Crap Crap Dude.
Of course.
Thank you.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out the show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud, Bandcamp, or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on geekade.com. For more
We paid special money for the .. As
yeah,
well.
We did.
It's the worst $12 we've ever spent.
All right, and that's it, everybody. Thank you for listening, and keep playing games.